Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your co-hosts Matthew Davis and Matt Kupferle.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. My name is Matthew Davis and I'm with my co-host Matt Kupferle. And on today's episode, we are going to be going over player news, some general news around the league, along with some ADP in the NFBC main event. How are you doing today, Matt?
Doing great, man. It was a ton of fun doing episode 1. Couldn't ask for a better first podcast with some of the best in the industry. Super fun recapping those main event drafts. But now we're going to get back into our cadence, which is coming to you a couple times a week. And Matthew and I are really excited. So thanks for the engagement. Ton of fun stuff in store, and we're ready to get to it.
So Matt and I are going to jump right into things, and it starts off with a tweet from Angels beat writer Rhett Bollinger, who recently tweeted earlier today on Thursday, July 16th, that Matt Theis had tested positive for COVID-19 way back in June, and it took nearly a month for him to get 2 negative tests. And along this process, he was asymptomatic. So it's not necessarily that Matt Theis is bringing a huge impact, you know, fantasy-wise, but what do you think about the prolonged amount of time that it took for the 2 negative tests?
Yeah, I think in general, Matthew, it's a really good question. And you know, we'll hit on this in some of our listener questions as well. It's the challenge. I think we have to kind of weigh our landscape right now. I think in general, I'd be curious to get your opinion. But for me, I'm a little bit conservative. I think for those that have asymptomatic symptoms, and again, I'm certainly no doctor, but for those that have asymptomatic symptoms and certainly players that are back with their team, you probably have a little bit more confidence. But it does make you a little bit nervous when you hear these stories like these where, you know, they have to have those 2 negative tests to get back on the field. For me, it gives me a little bit of a pause of some folks that are confirmed positives. How fast will they get back? And that's where my concern lies.
That's right. It makes projections really tricky when you're trying to deduct something from a projection once you get this news. And then you really don't know, okay, if it's 2 weeks right now, you kind of want to give – now that it were less than a week or a week away from opening day, I believe 8 days from the July 23rd, it kind of, you know, puts you at a halt in regards to where you can move these guys. Because initially when we were having, you know, guys like Hector Neris and Freddie Freeman test positive, we're now seeing reports of them returning to camp and that they're feeling good and they've passed their negative tests, obviously, to be in camp. And everything's full systems go for them. So with those guys, they've been dropping a little bit in the NFBC main event ADP, but now it becomes more complicated when you are, you know, closer than the 2 weeks or the 14 days prior to opening day. Now, you know, some of these guys are going to be missing time. So it does become a little bit tricky in regards to that. So you definitely need to stay up to date with all of the beat writers for each team in regards to COVID. The next piece of news that we're going to get into is the Blue Jays earlier today. One of their beat writers, Laura Armstrong, confirmed on Twitter that the Blue Jays received government clearance to play their home games at the Rogers Center in Toronto. There was some talks previously about them maybe playing in Florida and not being able to have other teams, you know, in the U.S. or in the States be able to travel over into Toronto. So do you think that that's any – do you think that there's any impact to that, or is it just something that we should brush over?
Yeah, I think it's just – like you said, I think it's something to be aware of. It was interesting because I saw some interaction, honestly, between beat writers and others about, okay, so if they go to Buffalo or somewhere else, what happens? Sometimes I think we can get a little bit paralyzed by overanalysis. For me, Matthew, I think this is when we move on and just keep an eye on.
Beautiful. So the Washington Nationals are almost in that similar bucket, but now they're doing a 180 of the Blue Jays. And there was reports today that they could be looking to be moving their home games from Washington, D.C. over to Fredericksburg, Virginia. And that would be really interesting because they're the, you know, the reigning World Series champions and they're hosting their first home series against the Yankees. That's going to be televised nationally and it's the first game of the season. And so that kind of puts a wrinkle into their plans with some of the government guidelines and restrictions that they're having in Washington. What do you think about some of that, those impacts?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, whenever you're trying to, you know, we do a lot of really good analysis as an industry on, you know, things like park factor and where you play. And then you get this wrinkle, right? You've got this new stadium that could potentially be in play. There's data that we can look into, but we're all kind of speculating. So I think it's another one. It's similar to Toronto. I think they're doing the right thing. They're kicking the tires on, you know, what should or shouldn't happen. It's a brand new stadium, so I'm sure there's some equity in, you know, a $35 million AAA stadium, which was slated to open this year. They'd love to use it. But, you know, given that it's brand new, Matthew, we don't know a ton about how it plays. You know, we've got some decent data on some other fields, but we don't have a ton of good data on what this is. So I think it's another one, again, you keep your eye on. I think it's a little bit buzzy. And then, you know, once we get in there, we'll figure out how it goes. Nationals Park was one that played super home run heavy last year. So that was kind of interesting. So, you know, as we look at that, those hitters and those lineups, it could become a challenge, but we'll figure that one out, I think, as we go. Any different take from you from that perspective?
The only thing that I would take away from that is if they are, you know, going to move over to Virginia and play in a different park, these pitchers are used to their mounds, they're used to their routines in their clubhouse, and the hitters are used to their backdrop. And not that, you know, mm-hmm. it wouldn't take forever to adjust to some of these things, but I noticed that there was reports, you know, in Los Angeles where some of the Dodgers were kind of complaining about the new backdrop mm-hmm. that they were implementing there at Chavez Ravine. So that could play somewhat of a factor. We know how Max Scherzer is. He, you know, might start bitching that he doesn't like the feel of the mound or something like that. We don't know for sure if they are going to play there, but that is a tidbit, and it could impact some of the players. And there are a lot of you know, relevant players that are playing for the Nationals this year, so it is something to monitor as of right now. So next we're going to get into player news, and each player that we go over, I want to mention their current NFBC main event ADP, along with where they're, you know, tentatively being taken and some of the news that might negatively impact them or positively impact them. And then after that, Matt and I are going to touch base with a like buy, hold, sell segment and just kind of let you guys know where we're currently at compared to the NFBC main event market. And the first player that we're going to discuss is Austin Meadows, and he had some interesting news. Or there was some interesting news that dropped about him on Twitter recently within like the last 10 or 15 minutes, was that he tested positive for COVID-19, and it's pretty much a shoo-in that he's going to be out for opening day. And that's going to leave a big hole in that lineup, because Austin Meadows, his current ADP in the main event is 39 with a min pick of 36 and a max of 42. So he's locked into that third round, and now that he's going to be missing opening day and he won't be in that lineup for, I would say, 7 to 8 days minimum, what are you doing there, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, look, I love Austin Meadows. If you ever wanted to look at the example of what a completely lopsided trade looks like, look at what the Pirates and Rays did. Pirates acquired Chris Archer. The Rays got Tyler Glass now and Austin Meadows in a trade. And all Austin Meadows did last year, over 591 plate appearances, was rip off a 33 homer, 12 stolen base season. I mean, dude was obviously awesome. But the biggest thing for me is the impact overall. I think you've got to discount some playing time. You know, you and I have had some great conversations on, is that 10%? Is it 20%? Again, we don't know how far that is, but I think you have to discount him a bit. I think you're going to start to see him slide in online championships, main event drafts, et cetera. And I think you've got a significant impact to a guy like Manny Margot, who, you know, they already had probably Hunter Renfroe playing right field. But then there was a little bit of a log jam between Kevin Kiermaier, Margot, and obviously Austin Meadows. And then you've got a bat like Jose Martinez that was sitting there probably waiting to hit against left-handed pitching. So to me, Manny Margot becomes a pretty interesting late round steals target. Guys had a ton of speed, you know, came over this February in that trade from San Diego. So I am interested. I'm going to buy on Manny Margot. And for now, I guess I would hold on Austin Meadows to really understand what that situation is. Maybe even he becomes a sell at his current ADP, which probably seems obvious, but probably the bigger takeaway for me is Manny Margot becomes a buy.
I like it. Yeah, I would definitely agree with you on that. I would sell Austin Meadows if he currently sticks in the, you know, the third round of the NFBC main event drafts. I highly doubt that he will. People adjust pretty quickly in those leagues. And the Manny Margot, that's interesting. He does provide some speed. He has elite defense, and he will get the opportunity to play in that talented Rays lineup for the first week. Don't forget Yoshi Tsutsugo. He's part of that lineup as well. And so they still have some depth there, and I believe that they'll be fine. But depending on where he goes, I guess, you know, as you did say, if he, it's a sell at the current price, but I think the market will adjust. And so I would currently probably want to just look to see where he does fall in the next couple of days. My first NFBC main event draft is on Saturday. And so there should be a little bit of noise in the market to see where he's going to be going when I draft then. So I think
I cannot wait to see your draft and accordingly make fun of you for all of your picks after that happens.
It's going to be wild. I cannot wait. I'm real eager. I still don't even have my draft order for that. Last time I checked, though, there are 10 out of 15 spots filled. So it looks like it is going to fill. And once it does fill, I think KDS, the draft spots will get filled pretty quickly, too. So the next player that we're going to touch on. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Okay, so the next player that I want to touch on is Franchi Cordero. He was also a late-breaking news player for us when we were, you know, during pre-record when we were chatting. Franchi Cordero was recently traded from the San Diego Padres over to the Kansas City Royals, and it was a straight one-for-one, and he was traded for left-handed pitcher Tim Hill. Do you think that there's a positive or negative to any of that?
Yeah, I think there's probably not a ton. I think it's kind of just a hold at this point. I mean, I've always been intrigued by Franchi Cordero. The guy has a ton of skills, major, major pop in a park like San Diego. The challenge is he goes to a park like the Royals that kind of suppresses home run pop as well. I think he plays. I think he's got a full-time role, obviously, as you look at the Royals. You know, they've got Whit Merrifield playing right field. They've got Gordon in left. So I think Cordero man center field at the expense of maybe Ryan O'Hearn or some other folks that move around. And on the Padres side, you know, I don't know that there's maybe a huge impact, but Franchi Cordero has been one of those guys that I've always been super intrigued by. So I think if you're looking to fill maybe a fifth outfield spot or you're taking a dart throw and you need some speed again, I think Cordero is kind of an interesting play. The problem with Cordero in an average league like the NFBC is he's just been absolutely brutal as a major leaguer. You know, an average overall of 240, and that's semi-inflated by 20 plate appearances last year with the Padres, 228 in 2017 and 237 in 2018. So he's going to hamper you there, but tons of pop, some nice wheels. That's kind of my takeaway. I'm probably maybe a moderate buy, but not anything I'm going crazy for with Franchi.
I'm definitely in the sell candidate here because he wasn't being drafted right now. So he doesn't have an NFBC main event ADP as it stands. And now that he's been traded and he's in recent news, there's going to be a swirl or a buzz around him. But he was pretty much already kind of locked into having an everyday role as of right now with the Padres having a DH. They were going to put Will Myers there, or tentatively they were going to put Will Myers there. And looking back at Franchi Cordero's career strikeout rate, it's at 38.8%, albeit in, you know, less than 300 plate appearances. His strikeout rate alone is a concern, and now he's moving league, so he's now going to see another pool of pitchers that he hasn't seen yet. And it's just a concern for me overall. The lineup is actually a downgrade. We are not sure where he's going to hit in the lineup. And, you know, when players do enter the news market and they are being talked about, they potentially get pushed up a little bit, whether it's for the good or the bad. So I'm probably going to be selling on Franchi Cordero in 2020. And the one thing that I will note for the Padres is that could be interesting is currently you would look at the lineup and maybe project Josh Naylor to now be the DH, and then moving from the DH to the outfield would be Will Myers. But I think that the Padres might actually try and implement more time behind the plate for Austin Hedges simply due to his skills and abilities behind the dish and calling a game, plate framing and doing all of that. Whereas Francisco Mejia is the more talented bat, but he's still not up to par when it comes to Austin Hedges' abilities behind the plate. So maybe the Padres look to put Hedges behind the dish more often and move Francisco Mejia into the DH role. And if that happens, Francisco Mejia would definitely gain some more positive value with the added plate appearances. So, you know, look out for that. Francisco Mejia could be somebody that provides a little bit more plate appearances than you're projecting simply because there is a little bit more room for opportunities in that lineup now. And so the next player we're going to go to is Jacob deGrom, and his NFBC main event ADP is 6, min of 5, max of 6. And that's he's just locked into the first round, and we all know that. But earlier today, Anthony DiComo, the New York Mets beat writer, stated on Twitter that Jacob deGrom's still comfortable and confident of pitching on opening day, but there was a weird feel to it. The Zoom meeting got cut off short, and all he could really get out of DeGrom was, in quotes, "he feels good." So the current goal for Jacob deGrom is to pitch on opening day, and deGrom mentioned that he would like to pitch 60 to 65 pitches on this Sunday, and that would put him in line to be the opening day starter still. But with that pitch count at 60 to 65, the flare-up in the back, the MRI results, which came back fine, it is all of a concern. And so now he is projected to go 80 to 85 on a good day on opening day against the Braves. Does that have any concern with you as being the second pitcher being taken right now, Matt, and being somebody that's going in the early first round? Are you still in on him at the first round? Or are you buying, holding, or selling on Jacob deGrom?
I think for me, it's really critical to understand the where in the first round. So he's actually my number one pitcher overall on my board. And so you bring up a good point. It's a lot of draft capital to invest on a guy like deGrom. You know, the 60 to 65 pitches is certainly concerning, but as somebody that also owns a lot of shares of Walker Buehler, who's still in the process of ramping up, I have concerns there as well. So I think it more becomes for me, and this is getting super granular, but is it in late first round? Then I'm a buy. If you've still got to pay equity price of third, fourth, fifth pick overall, I mean, he's probably a hold to a sell at that point in time. So I'm going to closely watch this one, see how his ramp up goes. DeGrom is just so talented and is such a great anchor for a staff that I'm going to keep a pretty close eye on that one.
I'm going to have to agree with you on that. If I'm picking at the end of the first round and DeGrom ends up falling, so he's currently going the sixth at the latest or on average, I think that if I'm drafting on that turn at the end of the first round, I would be willing to, you know, buy in on Jacob deGrom as well. And you mentioned Walker Buehler as kind of being something similar as that. And the news that came out today on him was that he's scheduled to pitch 2 innings this Friday. Both of those things are bad news because 2 innings isn't anything that we like to hear. And then pitching those 2 innings on Friday, his next time around would put him in line to start on July 28th on the road against the Astros. Another issue with that is he's now projected or slotted into the 5th spot in the Dodgers rotation simply because he's behind on time and his ramp-up process is a little different. He even mentioned in reports last week that he gets off to a slow start. And so now that they're only going to be pushing him 2 innings on Friday and then simply with the 5 days of rest, he's now missing the home starts and against the San Francisco Giants, which we're all banking on. And then his first start is going to come on the road against the Houston Astros. And what's the ceiling there? Is it 3 innings, 4 innings? So he's currently going in the first round as well, similar to Jacob deGrom a little bit later, though. His ADP is 10 with a min of 9, max of 11. And right now, I'd like to sit back and kind of watch these next few main events happen and see where he falls to. I'm assuming he falls a little bit at least. Does that perk your ears, Matt? Are you willing to kind of hold out and sit to see where the market lies with Walker Buehler? I'm sorry, or are you just going to simply start to fade because you're concerned about maybe the first two starts through the rotation.
No, I mean, I think the thing with Walker Buehler is that when you get the innings, Matthew, they're going to be really good innings, right? That's where I get super excited. I think that Dodgers team, as much as it pains me to say it, I think they're going to be a juggernaut this year. I only wish I lived in legal betting states where I could put some money on the over-under, because I'd be betting the over hard on the Dodgers, and I think Walker Buehler is going to be a big part of that. So in my mind, I think what he gives you with the ratios, with the strikeouts, you know, wins, such a tough, you know, category to really think about. I think Buehler fills all those buckets for you. So in my mind, I'm totally fine with what you're saying is, you know, keep an eye on what's going on. But I have no concerns with Buehler from that perspective.
Beautiful. Walker Buehler is a beast. And you said it perfectly. He is going to go out there regardless of the first couple of times, whether it be a few innings short. He's going to give you fantastic ratios and strikeout rates, and he's going to give you what you want. And then going on to deeper into the season, you know, being in the Dodgers rotation, he's going to be able to provide you what you're looking for in that investment. And the next player we're going to go into is Keston Hiura, the second baseman of the Milwaukee Brewers. His current NFBC main event ADP is 42 with a min of 39, max of 45. So he's one of the first second basemen that's going. On average, that's a third round pick. And there's now news about him nursing a sore throwing arm. And initially, some people were kind of speculating that it had issues to do with, you know, the ligament injury he had in 2017 prior to being drafted by the Milwaukee Brewers. There was some good news that came out that said that it doesn't appear to be correlated with that. And now that the Brewers do have the DH in the National League, that could help, you know, mitigate some of those issues when he needs to play on the field. Are you still buying in the third round? Now, I believe that you actually just recently invested in Keston Hiura in your qualifier. So you're the one that should be telling us what to do with Keston Hiura now.
Yeah. So, I mean, you probably couldn't meet a bigger Keston Hiura stan than me. I'm super excited about what he can do. To be honest, the news, I think, is fairly encouraging. Another one you have to keep an eye on. But I think overall, you know, the benefit is obviously the DH isn't playing the National League. So maybe they had some other plans, you know, with Ryan Braun, Justin Smoke, how they were going to utilize that position. But I think if anything, it continues to show that Hiura, you know, he's an elite bat. I think you want to own it. He had an elevated strikeout rate last year in the majors, but has shown, you know, obviously great numbers across the board. I don't have concern until they start to have concern or pause. They said it was precautionary, like you mentioned. So I'm still investing at the current price. In fact, if you're going to make an argument at the second base position, I don't know why he couldn't be in that top group or maybe even the top second baseman or one of them. So I'm still buying at his current price. I don't have concern.
Oh, man. You're ballsy. I like it, though. The one question, so there is a concern, though, for me at least, and it's actually not even about Keston Hiura. So let's say that he's, you know, completely fine and he's able to do what everyone wants to project him to do. What if he does absorb a little bit of time or a little bit more time at DH? Does that start to take away the inflated Ryan Braun that's been drafted? I know people are starting to get a little more turned on to Avisel Garcia. We've talked about Justin Smoke and Ryan Braun splitting time at first base. So one of those three guys are going to be, you know, the odd man out if Keston's needing to absorb some of that time at DH. Do you think that we should be bumping down Braun or Avisel Garcia or Justin Smoke, or should we just kind of let everything play itself out right now because we shouldn't be overreacting to a sore elbow at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to parse through the news. I think the biggest thing, and you and I have talked about it, is in this shortened sprint, at-bats and plate appearances are massive commodities that you need to be valuing. So
they're gold, Jerry. They're gold.
So if a guy like Hiura is missing any point in time, if we've got an athlete like Austin Meadows or others that are missing time, you have to consider what that means. And so to your point, if Hiura goes out, then that changes the ballgame a bit. You know, maybe it's a week, maybe, but I think what you and I have talked about too is, you know, with a guy like Mike Trout, you know, we're all assuming, and there's a lot of ranges on, he takes a couple days, but the reality is that Trout was probably going to play, let's say 57, 58 games without having a baby, Now he's probably taking a couple extra days because of the baby. Factor that in for Hira, right? So then you've got Hira now, and maybe he needs an extra day. Maybe if it's worse than what we think it is, he's got to take instead of one day off a week, maybe he needs two. Maybe instead of him taking 0 days off, now he needs one at a minimum. So I think that's what we have to do. And to your point, from a downstream perspective, how does that impact the other positions? Where do they have to shift around? They signed Eric Sogard, who is probably playing third base. Maybe he has to move to second. Who covers third? There's a lot of moving puzzle pieces on this one. For me, you know, I think the biggest part is – I think you hit it is I think you have to maybe downgrade Ryan Braun just by a touch, because at this point in both stages of their careers, Hira's maybe the better pure hitter. He probably is, and he's going to get those DH at-bats over Ryan Braun. So I think it's an interesting ramification, probably has some impact to Smoke as well. But that's really what's going on to me is we got to keep a close eye on this one. Hopefully everything's fine. But if Hira has to assume more DH at bats, I think you hit the nail on the head. Braun probably goes down a little bit.
You smell that? It smells like a buying opportunity with Yon Moncada. His current NFBC main event ADP is 78, min 70, max 86. Reports on Twitter, the stud has returned to White Sox camp. He's ramping back up, and they have, I want to say, 8 to 9 days until their opening day. So Yon Moncada was previously going in, you know, late February, mid-March drafts as sometimes late fourth round, early fifth round, and now we're seeing him go in the sixth round. Are you confident in Moncada now that he's returned to camp? He's one of those people that has tested positive for COVID, and now he's back. He's passed his two negative tests, and it's just pretty much a ramp-up process for the next 7 and 8 days to get his bat, you know, fully up to game speed. Where are you at on Yon Moncada?
Yeah, I mean, really good point. He was being drafted super high. That's been deflated a bit. Again, playing doctor is a pretty challenging exercise, but I think, you know, we all have hope that if he's been diagnosed with it and he can go full speed, he'll be ready or close to ready. That division and that lineup is going to be a really talented one, and they're going to get to beat up on the Royals and the Tigers. The Indians have a good rotation. I think the Twins will be sneaky good, but have some challenging spots. They get to play their interleague games against the NL Central, which is probably going to be fairly pitching poor. So I like Yon Moncada. He's a definite buy. I agree that I smell what the Rock is cooking. I love Moncada. I think he's great. I would be buying at his current opportunity cost. Certainly you could have a draft where he gets shoved up way too high, but in my opinion, he's a great opportunity at this point.
I love it. So just to finish on Yon real quick. So with the two NFBCA main event ADPs that we have up, there are 9 third basemen being selected ahead of him. And a few of them, I would simply just take Moncada ahead of. And those are Eugenio Suarez, Chris Bryant, and Manny Machado. And it's not that I dislike any of those guys. I'm actually, you know, fair market value on all of them. But I coming into the you know, previously before the test, I was really high on Moncada, and now that he's back in camp, I already deducted a little bit from his projections. I knocked him down the rankings. Since then, I've tinkered with it a little bit, and I'm, you know, just warming up to him again, and I'm going to be keeping my eyes on him because I do love the talent. The team context is only getting better. The ballpark plays well. And yeah, so Moncada is definitely a buying option for me, and certainly in the sixth round, that's something that I'm going to be looking to purchase. We have one more player that we want to go over before getting into listener questions, and that's Aaron Civale, the fourth starter in the Cleveland Indians rotation. His current NFBC main event ADP is 215, min 208, max of 221, and that extrapolates into the 15th round. And the recent news announced that we have on Civale is that he looked pretty good in his last outing. He went 6 innings while nearly throwing 100 pitches. And at this point of the season and what we have, anytime you hear somebody is able to throw 100 pitches, your lights should, your eyes should light up. I mean, it's insane to hear that right now, especially because you need to treat this as like somewhat of a spring training, even though we're a little bit later in the year. And he is projected to be the fourth starter in the Indians rotation with Shane Bieber, Mike Clevenger, and Carlos Carrasco. So the rotation alone is very talented. The division that they're pitching in, the ballpark, it doesn't fare that well. But overall, Savali seems to be faring or grading out quite well. Are you excited for the news that you just heard on Aaron Savali, Matt?
So I feel like I'm probably a little bit of a Savali truther also. I've liked him. There's something in the water with that Cleveland staff. You know, they just keep churning out these arms. And I think Savali is the next one that's in that group. Now, the hard part with Savali is, you know, when you look at some of the other guys that they have and have had, you know, they don't have, or Savali doesn't have probably the arsenal that obviously a Mike Clevenger has or a Shane Bieber. You know, he usually sits about 92 and doesn't really have that wipeout breaking ball. He's got some good stuff, but he doesn't have any of that stuff that you see from some of those other guys that you say, okay, wow, he's the next one in that line. And, you know, like you mentioned, they've got Cookie, they've got Bieber, they've got Clevenger. So he's clearly the number four in that group. The other thing, though, is that he's going to get, as we mentioned, he's got the Royals and the Tigers. He's got some interesting lineups in the NL Central. I think he's in a great spot. Like you mentioned, there's been so much swirling news, and, you know, this could all change on a dime. Very quickly, you know, maybe something happens, whatever it might be, but I like Savali a lot. His cost, he seems, you know, like he's got some pretty big upside, but what are you thinking about it, Matthew? Are you buying, you know, some of the advanced metrics would say, you know, he was pretty lucky with some of the ERA metrics. But I'm curious to get your thoughts.
Well, volume's king and the innings, you know, the 100 pitches that he's thrown, and he's pretty much built up to go, you know, 5, 6, even 7 innings, depending on the efficiency in a game. And knowing that the Indians are already willing to stretch their starters out, I was confident and comfortable with him, but he is the fourth starter. And once you get to the fourth and fifth spot of a rotation in a 60 game season in 66 days, there's going to be, you know, some room to kind of skip over guys. And I don't think that it'll impact the fourth starter as much. But the positive news with Aaron Savali could potentially just boost his current ADP in the main event significantly up. And if you start to push him up, you know, in the even just one more round in the 14th round, 13th round, you're starting to get into other guys that are higher up in the rotation, even some, you know, some closer speculations or guys that have the closer role. And then it becomes, you know, an issue with room for profit with me simply because he is the fourth starter and there's going to be a ceiling or a, you know, a lack thereof when it comes to innings pitched or amount of games pitched because he is the fourth starter. So having 11, 12 games projected in his profile to start this year is fine. And if he is able to go deep in them, he's only able to go deep because he's simply being efficient and effective. So if something does get derailed and he isn't good or solid in one of those starts, or if he gets absolutely rocked, then he's almost returning a negative profit right away because he's going, you know, in the middle of these drafts now at the 15th round. And after you hear these reports of 100 pitches, people are going to push him up. And like you said, the Cleveland Indians, whatever it is with their rotation, they're drinking something different than other teams. And that noise gets heard. And so he will get pushed up a little bit. I don't know if it's, you know, substantial, but he could get knocked around. It's possible for anybody to get knocked around. And with him getting pushed up and being fourth in the rotation and, you know, not being completely sold on everything that he provides, I think I'm going to hold on Savali just because I think I do like the depth and the volume. But if he does go up any more, I'm simply out. It will be a sell.
Nope. Totally fair. So I think that wraps up our news. We're going to turn to four listener questions. Thanks, everybody, for the listener questions. We want to take those, engage in social media. It's fun. Get a lot of ways to think about some different things, and listener questions are great. Sometimes we think, you know, we've got some ideas, but it presents some new topics. So, Matthew, I've got four listener questions I want to start off with. First one from Chad, or my buddy Rufus, came over from email from Louisville. And this one was a recurring theme, so I think it's a really good question because we got this in a variety of different ways. Matthew, how are you looking at players or evaluating players that have already have had COVID-19? And for guys that are, you know, testing positive recently, like an Austin Meadows, a Roldis Chapman, you know, what are you doing with that whole landscape? How are you evaluating it? And specifically for the guys like Yoan Moncada, how are you thinking about them?
Each player is being time stamped for me. So depending on when we get that report and if we get that report. So some players haven't reported yet and we're uncertain to as why. And so you start to speculate, okay, they tested positive. But so for an example, for Hector Neris and Yoan Moncada, we do know that they did test positive and we do know that they're back at camp. And that's, you know, it's a given. They've passed two negative tests. They're ramping back up. They're part of the team process moving forward, and they're good to go. So it's all, you know, case by case scenario, because each and every day it becomes more tricky simply because we don't know if they have tested positive. Because if the team or the player, I'm sorry, the player, not the team, wants to allow that information to be leaked or to be provided to the public, then we can speculate, okay, what, 14 days? But now we've read about a couple cases similar to Matt Theis where it's taking more than 2 weeks. So you can just grab player C, whoever that may be, John Doe, and tomorrow around noon, they state that, you know, John Doe has tested positive on Friday, July 17th. Okay, so you want to deduct from his projections initially. Yes, that's an absolute truth to that. But how much do you deduct? Now, there's 14 days of quarantine. We know that that's going to happen, but it's not certain that they pass that test right away. So it's hard to project that or predict it now. So with players like Yoan Moncada and Hector Neris, we know they've, you know, been tested positive. They've had their quarantine. They've got their two negative tests. Now they're back at camp. I'm going to actually push their projections up to almost similar to where they were. And I'm going to hope to look at them as a buy low candidate. Whereas someone like Austin Meadows, we know he's going to miss the first week of the season. And that's the minimum right now. So it's going to depend on the draft market and where players are evaluating these people that are testing positive for COVID. And if they're not ignoring that market and they're just going to continue to take someone, I don't think they will. But if someone just says, hey, I don't care, I'm taking Austin Meadows in the third round still, I love the talent, you've got to look at that as an opportunity for yourself to succeed, because they're not doing it right. And they're simply going to be missing time. And it's only 60 games in 66 days. So every single player is going to have days off for rest.
That's right.
So yeah, you're gonna have to deduct on some of the guys. So it's really, long story short, it's player by player basis, and it's also time stamped. So knowing when they're being played, if it's a person that's already been positive and they're back, I look at it as an opportunity to buy.
No, I think that's totally fair. okay, question two. From Eddie Gillis, a really strong, talented NFBC player that we know.
Shout out, EG.
Thanks for the question. I'll
see Eddie Gillis in a main event.
Nice. Okay, he's looking for an outfielder in the 20th round or later in a main event setting. Who are you picking? Austin Riley, Corey Dickerson, Teoscar Hernandez, or Aaron Hicks, and why?
So knowing that Eddie is a high-stakes NFBC player and a good one at that, and he does dip his toes in the main events and everything else, I'm not going to give Eddie an answer on those four players. But I will pick a player that is being drafted outside of the top 300, meaning he is being selected in the 20th round or later, and that outfielder is named Jesse Winker for the Cincinnati Reds. And a few of those factors are the DH helping him, because last year they tried to hide him in the outfield. The Cincinnati Reds lineup is stacked even better than last year with the additions of Mike Moustakas. We know that Eugenio Suarez is now healthy from some of his ailments that he was battling earlier in the first spring training. And then the central divisions alone don't have many starting left-handed pitchers, and the quality of those left-handed starting pitchers are not that great. So when you factor all of those things in, it bodes very well for Jesse Winker. He does have a talented bat. He has the skills that can play. And then one last thing that I'd like to touch on is some people said, well, what happens when there is a left-handed starting pitcher and they want to substitute Jesse Winker later in a game? Or, you know, any of those situations that bring some sort of uncomfortable split. And the answer to that is if you pull up the Cincinnati Reds roster, they simply don't have a stacked offensive lineup outside of the 9 projected starters right now when including that DH. So even if you want to add some of the guys to the mix when there's a left-handed starting pitcher in some of those central divisions, the quality of the starting pitchers aren't great. And the quality of bats that are sitting behind Jesse Winker that would be filling in when facing a left-handed pitcher aren't even at par. So yeah. Jesse Winker is my answer, and that's pretty confident in that.
I appreciate your ability to pivot completely off of answering the question. I'm sure Eddie will as well. But I'm looking forward to some dialogue with Eddie on Twitter.
Eddie knows we go toe to toe. So I'm sure he's smiling right now, and hopefully he doesn't push Jesse Winker up above those guys. I'll see you soon, Eddie.
All right. Another question from Twitter. This is from @GinobliTheGoat. If your draft dictates punting elite closers or starting pitching, so being pushed into a little bit of a black box and where you go with that, how does that affect your overall team build, and what are you doing differently if you're required to punt one of those?
First and foremost, Ginobili the GOAT is arguably one of the greatest single handles that I've ever seen on Twitter. Ginobili the GOAT, that's fantastic. But to answer the question about elite closers and starting pitchers and how the draft market can affect your build, if you get insecure about people getting pitched up or pitchers being pushed up, you can ignore it, though, even though if you want to, if you think that bats are falling and you're getting all this value in bats, it's going to become an issue, especially in an overall contest. You cannot ignore any of the categories, and you simply have to compete in all of them. So you need to monitor the market, but don't feel insecure when you're monitoring that market. And when you're in your draft, just don't fall in too early on a run, and make sure that you don't get left out of a run. If you feel insecure about something, try and feast when everyone else is feasting. Don't start it. Don't end it. And then on top of that, just basically knowing that you've got to be comfortable paying a little bit more for some of these pitchers. So if it's closers, which has been the big example this year in the NFBC main event, if they're getting pushed up multiple rounds, yeah, something gets pushed down, and we're all saying that, and it's true. Something does get pushed down, and what we're noticing right now, those are some hitters. Those are the Matt Chapmans, the Josh Donaldsons, and some of those guys. And those are all great hitters and whatnot, but the fact is if 14 and your team 15 and 14 of those teams are pretty much paying attention and they're buying into pushing up on these closers, just get in on the market with them and be right there with them. And if you are simply just investing the same amount of capital as your other league mates, it leaves all those hitters that you're saying or thinking that are falling, it's falling to everybody. And so you're keeping yourself on a level playing field, and you're not pushing yourself too far behind the eight ball, because I promise you, I know saves, and especially this year when ratios can get blown up so quickly, it seems like a really bad investment. But you do not want to plan on investing your time, your frustration that's going to be included in that time, and your budget allocation in FAB towards finding closers, finding saves, finding strikeouts, or any of the above when it comes to getting a category from a pitcher, whether it be a starting pitcher or a closer. You simply have to compete with the market. You do not want to fade it in an overall competition.
No, very good points. It's tough. when you get into kind of that mindset, I mean, it's going to be a challenge, and we're learning every day with more data. And that's the fun thing about the NFBC is the more drafts that go through, to your point, you see some ups and you see some downs. So it's critical to keep kind of track of those. Okay. Last question. This is from Jay in Kentucky. Jay, shout out to Jay. He's long time. I play in an NL only league that I played with Jay for quite a few years. Jay's question is, if you are looking at rookies to make their mark in this 60-game sprint for 2020, Matthew, what number one or maybe one and two are you looking at to really make their mark?
So it sounds like Jay's an OG. He's an OG with you, yeah?
Definitely.
You guys,
OG.
The NL, get down on that. Apple good browser, friend of yours.
But an OG.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. So one of my non-NFBC leagues, I only have two. So my two home leagues, one of them is an auction league and the other is an NL only league. And this league was damn near created, you know, maybe the first decade of my existence. And the guys that were doing this league, they did the box score keeping from the newspapers and had to submit everything by hand. So long story short, anybody that's still playing in an NL or an AL only league, I appreciate the grind and I love the commitment because it's something special and it keeps the love of the game going strong. But anywho, Jay, shout out to you. Cheers. Let's clink some glasses sometimes. Sounds like you're cool as shit, especially if you're from Kentucky. Let's go with so the rookies. I'm going to give you two, actually, Matt and Jay. I'm going to go with one NL and one AL, and both of them are pitchers. And these are teams that are still young, but I believe that they can compete and they can, you know, keep up with this race. And for the National League, that's going to be Mackenzie Gore. You know, he's going to be one of the starting pitchers for the Padres. And then on the AL side, I'm going to give you Nate Pearson, and he's in the similar boat as Mackenzie Gore, but on for the Toronto Blue Jays. And I believe both will get called up. If they don't, you know, start right away, I believe that both will come up because both teams are going to be in competition and they're going to fare well. And so give me both of those guys as the two rookies that give me or give you the biggest impact in 2020.
No, those are two good ones. You know, it's hard, right? I you hear these reports of service time manipulation and some other things. It's kind of hard to figure it all out. So it's a bit perplexing, but those are two really good names. That'll wrap up our listener questions. Appreciate all of them. We got a ton of them in, and I'd say, you know, keep them coming. We got, you know, like we mentioned earlier at the start of the show, we've got a couple shows on deck. Matthew, what's coming up next?
So we're going to have a podcast every Saturday evening, and we're just basically going to make it clear and concise real quick, and it's going to be maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes max. And we're going to cover FAB every weekend. We're going to go over some of the speculative ads. We'll do that with the NFBC RotoWire Online Championship, which is 12 teams. We're also going to do that with the NFBC Main Event, which is 15 teams. So we'll have a little bit different of varieties for the FAB, you know, FAB weekend that's coming up. And not a lot of fantasy baseball podcasts produce content late Saturday night, giving you something to listen to Sunday morning. And so we kind of want to fill that gap or that void for you and just touch bases on what's going on over the weekend and how we can basically find some leverage or an edge to succeeding in the FAB market.
No, that's great. We'll touch base over the weekend. Hopefully, again, if you've got, you know, any pressing issues, we love interacting on Twitter. Matthew, where can they find you on Twitter?
At Matty Wood with an underscore on both ends of the Twitter handle. And then also I have the RotoWire, the NFBC RotoWire Online Championship Beat Matty Wood edition tomorrow night, Friday, July 17th. Yeah. At I want to say 8 p.m. Eastern, but currently looking at it, I think I only have two or three opponents that have actually filled this league. So there needs to be another 10 to 9 people that join this league tomorrow by 8 p.m. Eastern, or nobody will be beating Matty Wood. So please come try and, you know, come play against me, draft against me, hang out with me in the chat room. If you have any questions, you can hit me up on Twitter at any time. I love talking. I'll always make sure to respond to any of the tweets that you send. So yeah, come join me and try and, you know, beat Maddie Wood tomorrow night. The NFBC RotoWire Online Championship is July 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern. What about you, Matt? What do you have going on?
Yeah, Twitter's fun. Yeah, you can follow me at M Kupferle, K-U-P-F-E-R-L-E. Like Matthew, we're both heavy into Fade the Noise and some articles we've got up for preseason. I'll be in an online championship on Tuesday. Unlike Matthew, I actually – my league filled today and I got my draft order. So ooh. I'm picking fourth. And so I need to think about that one and what I want to do out of the four spot. No league is easy, and I saw the venerable Clay Link is in my league, so it should be a lot of fun to do battle with some heavyweights, but looking forward to it. So, you know, NFBC, find a way in there. It's a great opportunity, be a ton of fun, and we'll be looking forward to Saturday morning or Saturday evening's podcast for our next installment, focusing on Fab.
That's right. And then one last thing to touch on the NFBC RotoWire Online Championship tomorrow night that I'm in. Since it is a beat Maddie Wood league, and if you do finish ahead of me and finish in first place in that league, FTN is going to donate a $50 subscription or a credit towards a subscription on the website. And that can be towards betting, fantasy, DFS, whatever you guys want. So if you're confident or comfortable and want to draft against me and hang out with me tomorrow night and you think you can beat me, you'll also get the league prize from the NFBC and possibly that $25,000 overall prize that the NFBC is providing. And on top of that, if you know, you'll get the subscription to FTN. But if you win 25 grand, I don't think the 50 bucks is going to mean much. But you've got to play. You've got to pay to play. So please come enter into the ring with me and let's have some fun because that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically free money if you think about it. You can get a free FTN subscription. You're probably going to win 25 grand. I just go ahead and fire that entry in, to be honest. So,
no doubt, baby.
Well, I think that wraps things up for us for episode 2. Matthew, it was a ton of fun going through news and notes and a couple ideas. We will look forward to catching up with everybody on Saturday. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with the two Matts. Please rate, subscribe, and review the podcast, and we hope you listen again soon.